So when full-scale war started, SDES immediately started to provide with emergency support to even to those protected areas we are not working with in Ukraine.
That was my colleague Hanna, who works for the Frankfurt Zoological Society, FZS, in Ukraine. On February 24th, 2025, it had been 3 years since Russia launched its war against Ukraine. 3 years in which the work and lives of our colleagues in the country have changed. Some colleagues had to go to the front line. Much of the nature in the eastern regions of Ukraine are now burnt down or polluted with the oil and fuel from some vehicles. For example, forests and steppes, but also sensitive coastal ecosystems. In the last update on our work in Ukraine from the first year of the war, 2022, we told you about our emergency aid for the local national parks, which had to accommodate hundreds of people in their buildings. The protected areas in the Carpathians suddenly became a place of refuge for these people. Our focus was on providing accommodation and equipping the park with the most basic necessities, such as beds and mattresses, food and medicine. A lot has happened since then, and today we would like to introduce you to three colleagues who are sharing their personal experience of the new reality in their own country. And we learn about the strength and confidence with which the Ukrainian team is facing the ever-new challenges. My name is Marco Dinte, and you're listening to Hinter dem Zoo geht's weiter. Nature conservation in the face of war is our topic today, and we begin with an overview of what has changed since our last update in terms of cooperation with the Ukrainian team. That's why I'm sitting here in my podcast studio with Michael Brombacher, with whom I've already spoken twice about the situation of our projects in Ukraine, and who is, as you might know already, head of our FZS Europe department. Traveling to Ukraine regularly himself, and I'm very happy to have him here. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Marco.
Michael, this is the third anniversary of the start of the Russian war of aggression against Ukraine, and there's still no end in sight. The war has now become a terrible new reality in a country that is also close to your heart. You are still spending a lot of time there. You're traveling to Ukraine all the time. Can you give our listeners an insight in what has changed in our cooperation with the Ukrainian team?
Yes, a lot has changed. So FZS has been working since 20 years in Ukraine, and we were supporting protected areas in the west of the country, in Police and the Carpathians. And when the invasion started in February 2022, suddenly we were in an emergency mode, and we received a lot of requests for urgent help because people were trying to seek shelter in protected areas in the west of the country, but also near the front line where protected areas provided some safe space for them. So we provided a lot of emergency goods, beds, mattresses, food, medicine, firefighting gear for parks who had suddenly to deal with a lot of wildfires in the forests or in the grasslands or in the shorelines. So, there was a 1 year of every day reacting to emergency requests with a small team, a lot of stress for the whole team, psychological stress, of course, as well. This is what I updated you about in the last podcast. I think that was in 2023, 1 year after the invasion. And since then, the situation has changed a bit. So the people that literally stayed in the offices of national parks, in the visitor centers, and were sleeping there, they have like gradually moved out. They moved to relatives or back to their home places until they decided, yes, it's relatively safe there. There is not a safe place in Ukraine because there is attacks all over the country, but they still decided to move back. So the national parks could return to more or less the normal business. and we are supporting them with that.
As I said, you're traveling quite regularly to Ukraine. Can you take us with us for that? Like, how difficult is it to get in a country in the middle of a war? Like, isn't that completely A, difficult, and B, dangerous for you as well?
So you can get there. Of course, you cannot fly as it was possible before the invasion, but you can get there by train. I did this before the invasion because it's a more environmental friendly way to go there. So I either take a train via Berlin, and then from Berlin I continue to the border town of Przemyśl. And this is the gate into Ukraine, which everybody or most of the people take when they want to visit Kiev, for instance. So then you change the train and get on to the into the Ukrainian train to Lviv, which is 1 hour away from Przemyśl, and there is our office. So the travel is not so difficult. I can also fly to Krakow and then take a train to Przemyśl. So that's possible. Takes a longer time. And in the country, yes, it's dangerous. If you are in the cities, there is regular air alarms, in particular, of course, in Kiev, where also I have to be sometimes, and in this case, you have to go to the shelter, and that's what I do, because that can be risky.
You said it's a personal risk for yourself as well if you are in the Ukraine. Of course, it's a financial risk for FZS as well. Why is FZS still supporting these protected areas in a country which is under attack all the time?
Of course, the priority of Ukraine is to defend the country, and that's understandable. At the same time, as you said before, we are in the third year, and we never would have imagined that this war, this horrible war, continues for such a long time. So to a certain extent, life must go on for the people, even in these dark times. And protected areas, they have a function that is important for us conservationists or for humans, because they are rich of biodiversity, they keep the water away, so they have these natural values. But they are even more important since the invasion, because it's the only place where families in Ukraine, because they cannot leave the country, fathers, husbands cannot leave the country in most cases. So the Carpathians provide a safe space to recover from the tragedy of war, from the horror of the irregular air alarms. So people recover in beautiful, quiet and silent nature. And this function will continue after the war. It's also important for children to take a break from regular air alarms, where they can, in most cases, not sleep. So the Carpathians provide this safe space. And this part of society, this part of Ukraine also must function, and that's what we support.
And how are we specifically supporting these projects now?
So as I said before, we stopped with the emergency support of the first years, where we also provided this kind of help for more than 30 parks. Now we are back to the Carpathians and Polesia. These were our project areas since 20 years. So we support the parks in their regular work, yes, the daily work of the rangers, the daily work of the administration even. So we provide monthly running costs, we provide fuel, we provide, we repair the printer if it's broken in the office. If the roof is leaking, we fix the roof, and we insulate park buildings so the park can save energy costs. So that's what we do to maintain the operations of the park. We provide equipment, cars, and so on, all what they need. At the same time, the more technical work also continues. So we are engaged in developing management plans for the parks, which is the strategy of their operations for the next years. And we need to adjust together with the parks and the communities this strategy to the difficult times you are in right now, with less money, with more pressure on the forests and so on.
As you said, it's difficult times. I did a lot of podcast interviews already about FZS work, and it seems a bit like standing by our partners in those difficult times is a bit of FZS DNA, if you will. Is it true?
It's true, and that's really special about FZS. So we are not running away in case of a crisis. We stand with our partners. We go through thick and thin in difficult times, and so we did in Ukraine from the first hour of this invasion. We tried to support. And there's a famous quote of Bernhard Schimek, who was the Frankfurt Zoo director, and like he re-established FZS as a conservation organization in the 1950s, and he was running the conservation work of FZS at that time. So he went to Uganda in the late 70s to Kidepo Valley National Park, and where he was supporting the park. He discussed with the wardens, with the director, the kind of support. After successful meetings, he left. And then the park was attacked. Buildings were burned down. And one of the wardens followed Bernhard Schimek and said, "Mr. Schimek, now we don't need your help any longer because the park is destroyed." And Bernhard Schimek said, "No, this is the time where you need our help most. And this is what still FZS is about. And this is, I think, very special about FZS. And we have been like that in Ukraine from the first day of the invasion."
Still, what... Or you talked about buying cars, providing material and so on. It's quite a costly. How are you funding the work in Ukraine right now?
So, of course, we are dependent on additional funding. We cannot fund all these big operations. We are supporting 20 parks right now. That's huge. So that's not possible with our own resources. We are dependent on governmental funding. We receive grants from the German government, from the Ministry of Environment, and from the Ministry of Economic Development. And but we also are dependent on private donations. They are really important, especially for the current situation in Ukraine. And with these private donations, we can operate quite fast and flexible. And this is what is needed in times of crisis. So, yeah, it's a mix, and the private donations are really important to us.
Right now, we are also very interested in the insights our Ukrainian colleagues can give us from the country itself, who are living there and doing their everyday work, supporting conservation in a very admirable way. This is what I'm going to talk about now with two of my colleagues from Ukraine, and I'm very happy and thankful for this interview so far. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Marco.
I'm right now online talking to Maria Halaiko, a colleague of mine from FZS Ukraine, and I'm very happy to have you here on the podcast. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Marco. I'm also happy to be here and nice to meet you.
We're talking today about your work and the work of FZS Ukraine in the face of war. But maybe let's start with a short introduction of yourself. Could you tell our listeners who you are and what you do for FZS?
I'm a project manager for protected areas management. So I work directly with protected areas in Ukraine and help them to plan their work, to improve the management in general, and also supporting different specific projects that we are doing within FZS Ukraine for protected areas in Carpathians.
Maybe we start with another personal question, if I may. Where in Ukraine are you living?
I live in Lviv. We also have here our office based in this city. Yeah, it's my hometown. I was born here and I live here.
Yeah, we might put a map of Ukraine as well in our show notes, but could you maybe describe a bit where in Ukraine Lviv is and... Yeah, the general setting.
Lviv city is located in the west of Ukraine. So this region is not affected by war to the highest scale because it's not close to the front line. So we are affected by the war, but not to such high extents like other regions in Ukraine that are close to the front line, for example, like east of Ukraine, south of Ukraine, and northeast.
But still, your life has changed, I assume, since the beginning of war. How do you experience those changes in the country?
Yes, I clearly remember the first days of the full-scale war. So I remember that many people, including me, did not believe that the full-scale war would begin. Of course, we heard, we watched the news about these warnings, but we didn't believe that it will happen to the full scale. But when it happened, it was a big shock for all of us. And during these first days of the war, we were just very afraid because we didn't know what will be tomorrow. So I would say it was a very big change that changed all of us. But for this, I want to add that during these first days of the war, we didn't know what to do. We were just like stuck. Also me, I didn't know at all. And then I remember we, our big FZS family, just immediately within these first days, we decided, so we have to do something. We have to help people who are directly affected by the war from the frontline regions. And I remember during these first days, it was a big support that FZS provided, especially this even mental support, because we knew that we are not alone. And yeah, it was very, very great support as direct physical. I mean, we provided lots of emergency support to Carpathian parks, to parks in Police, also to parks that are located in the frontline regions. But also, as I said, this mental support that we knew we are not alone. We have our great colleagues from FZS, from Germany, that helps. So this was really cool.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I remember those days when we were collecting blankets and everything here in the office in Frankfurt. Now the war is already going on for 3 years. How has things changed? You said you were very, well, shocked or surprised in the beginning. Did it become a bit like everyday life for you right now?
I would like to say that, of course, we are used to many things that are happening right now. For example, air alarms, checkpoints at the roads, so we have to always go through these checks. Of course, we are used to these things, but still I cannot say that this is something basic and we do not pay attention on that. It still affected our lives a lot, and we suffer. Of course, we suffer from all of these, and especially when we when we have close people that are in the army that are affected directly. So this news also like very difficult to handle.
I can imagine that, or well, hardly imagine how it would really be, but I'm very sorry for that. Thanks for giving us such an intimate view on your life right now. I'm very thankful for that. You are part of the team of FZS Ukraine. What is your current role there at FZS? What are you doing there?
So currently, I work, as I mentioned, in protected areas management. Also, I would like to add that in these first days in the full-scale war, when FZS started to provide this help, I was responsible for the support that was provided to the protected areas and internally displaced people in the front line. So these were the protected areas in northeast and south of Ukraine. And Yeah, we did a big work in that direction, and we provided lots of goods. And I remember the first requests were from a protected area, Svitihore, from Donetsk region. It was very cold at that time, was winter, and they asked for potbelly stoves. And we were searching immediately for these potbelly stoves. We provided them. It was challenging because at that time it was already high demand for these stoves, and it was difficult to find the available in stock. But we found, we provided. Also, we provided lots of firefighting equipment, food, hygiene products. So it was like a day and night work and support that we provided together with our team to these protected areas. But again, as was mentioned, FZS Ukraine, these areas are not the core for our work. We work with protected areas in Carpathian and Polesia regions. So after such a high and intense support that we provided to these highly affected by the war protected areas, we started to work again, like with Carpathians parks, as we did it before. So we were trying to again to renew our activities that were planned before the full-scale war. And now, personally, me, I work with the protected areas management. We develop for them management plans so they can manage their areas according to the modern international approaches and international standards of the conservation. So we develop these management plans, and we help and support protected areas then to implement them and do their work effectively.
What can be part of a management plan, if I may ask? Because some listeners might not know this term.
In simple words, the management plan, it's like a strategy for the park for the next 10 years. So they know specifically which results they want to achieve and what are the objectives for that, but also what are the concrete and specific actions that they have to do on a daily basis.
In Germany, Ukraine has been in the news mainly because of the war, of course. Tell us, why is nature conservation, especially keeping and managing these protected areas which you are talking about, so important right now? I mean, people might be wondering about priorities.
First of all, Carpathian region is very important in terms of biodiversity. We have very valuable ecosystems in Carpathians, namely primeval forests, but not only. And these are like hotspots for biodiversity, and they are very unique and very, very specific. So they are not in Europe anywhere else. That's why it's very important that we have to conserve them, to preserve them, because if we don't do it, they would be damaged. They wouldn't be preserved to this state that we want to see them. And it will also affect all the ecosystems that are connected to ecosystems in Ukraine. I mean, other ecosystems in Europe, because it's like the whole and complex one system, like one ridge. And if we look at the map of Ukraine, we can see that these regions that are directly destroyed by the war, the nature there could be recovered, but we don't know for how many years, maybe 200 years, maybe 1,000 years we would need to recover. So, and I think our task is to conserve what we have, these very unique ecosystems. That's why it's very important to do it even when we have war, but we still have to continue our work and activities, because if we don't do it, we can lose it forever.
And why is it so important for the people around the protected areas?
So people who live close to protected areas or even within the protected areas, they of course benefit from protected areas. First of all, it's ecosystem services. So they have fresh air, water, but not only them, also the visitors that come to these areas, they also could receive all of these ecosystem services. So people who live close to these areas shall understand that it brings them lots of advantages and benefits. If we don't preserve, it would also lead to natural disasters to people who live close to these areas, like floods, landslides, and etc. So unfortunately, there is some issue that not all people understand that even like a flood, it's already a consequence that the nature is not conserved in a good way. And also, especially for people who are affected by the war, they can come to protected areas and also to recover, to have recreation activities there, even to breathe, to walk around. So we shall understand that we have lots of advantages from this.
And you have protecting that, which is amazing. You already said you write management plans, or you help writing management plans. What are the challenges right now? Where is FZS crucial for the operations in the national parks or in the protected areas?
The main challenges are that many protected areas employee, they are called to the army. So protected areas are struggling because they understand that they don't have already these specialist experts in their institutions, protected areas that work on specific topics, for example. And also from our own experience, when we visit protected areas, people there share with us their opinions, their feelings. For example, there are people whose husbands right now are in the army, and they talk to us, they share these. So we also support them in such like mental way of support. Of course, we also support them with their needs. One of the biggest challenges that protected areas face is their daily operation. So due to the war, the financing of the protected areas was reduced. And that's why there is no sufficient funds to maintain and to provide this daily operation of the parks. And we help them in this direction. For example, we provide them fuel. This fuel is needed for patrolling, for science work, for also conducting eco-educational activities. We also provide them with office and household supplies that are also needed on a daily basis. We pay them licenses, for example, for accounting or other softwares. We also provide protected areas with generators, because as you know, we have blackouts in Ukraine due to the rockets attacks. And also, when the full-scale war started, we visited protected areas. We made assessment on how many energy they consume and which batteries, which generators they need in order to do their work. So we provide them with these like energy supplies. We also opened a car repair service. It's opened in the Carpathian National Nature Park, where we fix the cars, the vehicles. It's all vehicles from all protected areas that we support, so they can come to to this car repair service, and we will fix their vehicles. And also, we even have mobile car repair center. It's like a minibus, but which is specifically designed and maintained in order to fix the car. For example, it's one car which is quite remote, so our mechanics can drive to them and fix this vehicle. For 2024 year, we repaired 115 vehicles of the protected areas in our car service station. So that's a big number. And we are happy that we could help parks with their different vehicles, motorbikes, different types of cars, and they can use them continuously and do their daily tasks. Also, what is very important for daily basis, help protected areas to renovate their buildings. So we repair their administrative buildings. We would even build a completely new administrative building for one of the parks. It's Užanski National Nature Park. We also build ranger huts. For example, Verkhovensky National Nature Park, they have very remote and difficult to access area. And their ranger service, they have to patrol this area. And it's not easy when it's remote. You have to stay somewhere. You have to have some warm place. So we built for them ranger huts so they can make patrolling in a more comfortable way. Also, we help create eco-educational sites, also for eco-educational work for kids, for different groups of society that can come and learn nature and have good experience. Also, we provide to the parks equipment. This equipment, it's also very important for them for their daily work. For example, we provided Toyota pickups. We provided 31 Toyota within Support to Nature Protected Areas project. This is the specific project funded by German government. And also within this project, we provided dusters, Renault dusters. 11 cars of such, and also 71 motorbikes, specifically for rough terrain. And this year, we provided another 5 Toyotas to protected areas, also pickups, and also 10 motorbikes and one duster. So these vehicles are also very important to make patrolling, also science work. And so the park are able to do this work. Together with these vehicles, we provide another equipment. It's like equipment to monitor biodiversity. For example, camera traps, smartphones, tablets, binoculars, tree calipers, so different equipment, so the parks are able to monitor their species and understand in which state are the biotopes and what has to be done in order to improve the state. We also support the communities who live within protected area or close to the protected areas. We provided some, we implement some specific micro grant scheme. It's a special scheme where we select, where we announce like help for people who have some good initiatives. It's like local communities, they can apply for this program. And then there is a special committee that assess these applications. And we made like final selection of these winners, and we provide these micro grants. And the aim of this program is to establish and strengthen a better cooperation between local communities and the protected areas. So in total, we have like 25 local communities that can apply for such program. And this program is also funded by German government within Support to Nature Protected Areas project. And we already conducted first round. And within this first round, we supported 17 local communities with their ideas and projects. And now we are implementing the round two, where we select and support 13 communities. So it's different projects that they apply, and we provide them grants for that. And it's very nice because it really strengthens this cooperation, and people support the protected areas more, and they realize that they really could benefit because they live close to protected area. It's not the bad, because some people could say, oh, it's not good because we have restrictions and so on. But it's not restrictions. It's really benefit for them.
So what are the challenges for the protected areas on a daily basis? How do I need to picture that?
So the protected areas which border, which have state border with Poland, Slovakia or Hungary, for example, these areas that are directly on the border, protected areas have limited access to these areas. For example, they cannot access them as it was before the war easily. They need to get a special permit, and then with these permits, they can access the area. I think it's a challenge. It's a challenge for them because again, it complicates their daily work to patrol or to conduct some scientific activities on these areas. But also it complicates work for us because we also need to get these permits in order to access these areas. We need to get them from the state border control. Of course, we understand it's needed because our state border, they control this area, and this is necessarily. But this is one of the things that really changed and affected the work on a daily basis. Also, for example, the drone usage. Drones are strictly forbidden to use. As for the protected areas, as for us, also for our organization, so only some very specific or urgent cases where you can officially apply and state services can allow you to use this equipment. So this, what I would say, changed the work that we can see. But again, we continue on that. We have these permits, we get them permanently. So we still work.
Maybe on a more personal level, is it difficult to to stay motivated to keep on working in those areas that might be destroyed by the war eventually?
So we understand all the risks. Of course, we don't know what can be tomorrow, but I would say that our FZS Ukraine team is highly motivated, but also the protected areas, they are also motivated because we all have a very strong belief that the war will end soon. And after this would be a great development of our country. So we understand that we would need to do a lot. And we already have to start to do it right now. That's why we are motivated, because we do want these changes in Ukraine, and specifically, if we, in Ukrainian Carpathians that we work in. So we do want these changes. That's why we are motivated, because we do want them. We are not afraid of that they would be damaged or destroyed. We don't think of that, and we don't think it will ever happen. As I mentioned, yes, protected areas in the east and south of Ukraine and northeast, they are already damaged, unfortunately. But for Carpathians, I think this is the challenge for us. This is the opportunity. This is what we have to do. We have to work. We have to continue our work, and we have to preserve nature there.
Thank you. Can you maybe once more on a personal level tell me what FZS plays, which role FZS plays for you personally? You already said it was a big supporter and a big help in the beginning of the actual war. Maybe you can say a few words about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as I mentioned, I received lots of support from FZS, and I feel from the first days of the full-scale war that I'm not alone. I received lots of messages from colleagues from Germany, from FZS, where they said, we will support you, just tell us what you need, what we can do, we will do everything. So this support really helps, because otherwise it would be very difficult to cope if you don't feel that you are supported to such a high level. And it's like, as I mentioned, it's a big FZS family. We help each other, we support. And what's also great, that we support others. Yes, other parks, even through whole Ukraine, we had such possibility to support them. So I think this such a strong interaction, that we support each other within our organization, but also we support people outside. And this is great. This is a great example of how you can provide support.
Thank you very much for your time and this very interesting interview, which might have not been easy at all times, but I think you gave us a lot of very interesting insights. Thank you, Monika.
Thank you.
Right now I'm talking to Hanna Kuzo, who's working for FZS Ukraine, and I'm very happy to have you here online with me. Hi, Hanna.
Hi.
We are talking today about the work of the FZS Ukraine and the work of you in the face of war. But maybe let's start with a simple introduction of yourself. Could you tell our listeners who you are and what you do for FZS?
I'm working in FZS Ukraine since 2019. I used to work as communication officer, and now I'm working as a coordinator of environmental education programs in protected areas in Carpathians. We are running Carpathian program for a couple of years, and we are supporting Carpathian protected areas in different fields, and
like 2 years ago, we started to support them in environmental education too. So it's my field of work, environmental education, supporting their educators of protected areas, organizing different trainings for them, etc.
We will go into depth with that a bit later. Right now, I would ask you, would like to ask you a bit of a personal question. Where are you living in Ukraine? Where are you located right now?
I'm located almost in Lviv. Lviv is a city where our office is established in Ukraine, and it's in western part of Ukraine. I live near Lviv city, in village, in outskirts, but I tell everyone that I live in Lviv.
Sometimes easier that way, I guess.
Yeah, easier.
People know where that is. And how has your life been affected by the war? How has it changed in your everyday life?
Like immediately when war, when full scale war started, it changed, of course, drastically. So just I need to mention that Russian aggression against Ukraine started since 2014, but that was not as like full scale. So for me personally, that period since 2014 to 2022 was not so stressful. Like, we were fine here in western part of Ukraine, but in 2022 it was full-scale invasion, and there was definitely it didn't look like just only one corner of Ukraine is being affected. We all like all the territory was being shelled, and my sister, who was living in Kyiv at that moment with her family, was there, and we were worrying about them because, like, Russians tried to occupy Kyiv in 3 days, as they said, and these first weeks were very dangerous for. And also, I have many friends in Kyiv, but not only in Kyiv, but also in western and southern parts of Ukraine. So for them, it was extremely dangerous for some of them. Here in Lviv, so first weeks were still not safe, and we were super stressed, of course. We didn't know what will happen and what to do. I live in big house outside of Lviv city, and we have plenty of space. So we immediately told our friends, relatives to come if they need to leave Kyiv or other cities. So for first 3 or 4 months, there were a lot of people living in my place. From first, I think on the second day, my sister with her family came, and then our friends, and then for 3 other months, someone was living with us. And I'm very glad that it happened. So we were not alone with my family, my husband, my old grandma, who was still alive at that time. So many people were, the house was crowded, but it was very friendly and more optimistic vibe with many people. Everyone tried to help each other. So it was a very stressed period, but at the same time, we were very united, and it was a very special time, I would say. And then a lot of different changes in our project started when we understood that that it seems that we are surviving and we are continuing our work as organization in Ukraine. There were like a lot of different work started with the many protected areas, this emergency support, etc. So I became very busy after this first stressed, the first period, the first maybe a few months of full-scale war. It was like so big stress that we like froze. It was like frozen period. You don't know what to do, if you need to work or not, what will happen next day. And then it was more adaptation period, and a lot of additional work appeared. So I felt more alive than, okay, life is going on. We are still living here and there are a lot of work to do. And on that period, I adopted dog from Kyiv region. And this dog, Alfie, is living with us now. Now we have two dogs. So I would say that it's also change in life. I had one dog, now I have two dogs and this beautiful Swiss shepherd who was abandoned by his former people. He lives with us and now. So I don't know. It's like personal, emotional things. But I would say that that period was very intense. Intense and also my grandma, it was like, for me it's also special because my grandma used to live in this house, she was born when Second World War took place, and she passed away during this Great War. And for me it's very sad personal thing that she had to live from war to war period. And she never felt in safety and peace. Unfortunately, all her life is connected. Since she was born to her death is connected with war. And it's very sad for me personally that it's happened. That's sad, but it's our reality.
Yeah.
And still, I'm lucky to live in the western part of Ukraine and not to be affected as much as my friends in from Donetsk region, for example, who are working in protected areas there. And I was in some protected areas in eastern part of Ukraine, and I'm very happy and lucky that I was there before full-scale war, because now it's polluted by landmines. It's very dangerous, and I'm not sure if there would be any other possibility in future to visit those awesome areas, very beautiful nature areas, national parks and reserves. That is also a very sad part for me because I love nature. I am an ecologist by my diploma, and I'm an ornithologist also. And for me, this thing, to realize that there are so many beautiful nature places in your country which will never be safe to visit again, that is dramatically sad for me. It's not fair. It's very, also frustrating. It's very sad. And at the same time, yeah, you need to adapt to it, this reality, and to say, okay, now we just need to live with that. That's sad, but you cannot change it. No.
Still, we all hope for peace, of course. And also, FZS headquarters is standing with you. You are part of FZS Ukraine. You're part of the team. You already said you're working in environmental education. Can you tell us a bit more about it? What's your everyday work, basically, you are doing there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are supporting protected areas and their work for environmental education. So every national park in Carpathians or nature reserve, they have educational workers, like educators who are having their yearly plan, and they're doing a lot of different kind of events, educational events. So our goal is to slightly shift their educational work from inside building events to outdoor education. All these protected areas have beautiful nature areas, of course. And in my personal opinion, and as the DAS, we believe that kids should get to know nature, that they're outdoor on nature, not inside the classroom, not via photos on slides, but by touching trees, yes, and listening to the sound of nature. And these, of course, educators have outdoor events before we started work with them, but it's more complicated to organize outdoor event than to go in school and have a couple of classes there. And usually it's connected that parks, they don't have resources to organize such events. They don't have transport or other needed, like some equipment needed to do outdoor education. So I visited every protected area we work with. I made an inventory, like I interviewed all educators and tried to find out what they struggle the most with. So what are limiting factors for them in their work? And also I tried to understand how they plan their education and what we would like to do there. So now, you will cut this blah, blah, blah parts when I try to remember correct words. Sorry. Yeah. So what we are doing now, for 2 previous years, we were organizing different trainings for educators and we tried to convince them, inspire them, support them in creating, planning this and conducting these outdoor programs. So we made... For example, with my colleague Lucy Fleischhauer, we organized training about planning of outdoor programs by creating zinc tables, which can keep your program structured. So you can also pass this program to your colleague when someone new are coming to your team. And also it's easier for you to conduct program when you have proper nice plan. Also, we made training nature interpretation. We found out that a lot of educators struggling that they are not biologists or ecologists, so they don't know enough about wildlife. Usually they are like pedagogical workers. They used to be teachers in schools or kindergartens, and they just don't have this background in environmental sciences. So we are trying to help them to find this information. We are communicating with them very often by doing individual calls. On trainings, we talk with them and we give them try to answer their questions. And it's like a lot of ongoing work connected with this direct communication with every educator. And it's really helpful when you work individually with them. They are opening up and in groups, people usually are afraid to ask questions. Like it usually happens, but one-to-one, it works better. So we are having a lot of calls usually it's online meetings with educators. Sometimes we visit them. And all this communication is aimed to inspire them and to help them to organize and conduct outdoor programs. What big part of our project is that we already bought 2 environmental education buses. Mm-hmm. Those buses, which can reach a far destination on a bad road, which usually in Carpathians, in mountains, you don't have a very good quality roads, and it's also limitation factors. And usually parks don't have any kind of transport for bigger group. So it's hard to find. School buses are not always available. And also the school buses, they cannot reach very distant locations, or they cannot be driven on a bad road. So these 2 buses, which we now have, we are starting a couple of weeks ago, we start to this online registration from protected areas for these buses. We have online form and they upload their programs and then we register there in online calendar, so they see when there are free days and they can ask apply to use bus. Now they apply for buses, and these buses will start working from 15th March. So it's warm season, like we call. It still can be quite cold in Carpathians and snowy, but in some parks it's fine and you can start outdoor programs in March. And now our earliest registration is for 20th March. Maybe someone will register for earlier date, and I'm waiting when it will start working. Our buses are nice, branded, and I'm very curious and I'm very, how to say it, excited. I'm very excited to wait until the buses will be very busy bringing kids in forest there. So yeah, this year should be very intense, very interesting. And it's something new for me coordinating such work, but also for educators. They used that they don't have transport and they just never planned such events. They very rarely did outdoor, and now they can plan, and it's like a challenge for them, but also very interesting for some of them. They're excited also. It's a big part of our work. Yeah. And another big part is creating environmental education, like places, locations where you can do cool outdoor education. So we choose three different locations, really in the nature. They are like really cool, distant from big settlements, or even in the middle of forest, usually like national parks or reserves. They have different buildings, and not always these buildings are in very nice condition, but if they are in the middle of nature, they potentially can be very good for outdoor camps or one-day programs. So we are working on creating on these locations the, how to say it, minimum conditions for outdoor programs. So you need like toilet, showers, some platforms for tents, for example, some place together with kids. Like it should be very simple. There are no major building construction plant, but still like some general works to make this location like a little bit comfortable for outdoor camp. It's our goal, so that in future we have these parks have possibilities to launch camps, outdoor camps in tents. Some of parks already organize such camps, but not everyone have proper locations. So these additional new places for such camps will push like more outdoor camps in different parts of Carpathians. Also, it's a very big part of our work because it's connected with different construction things. And for me personally, it's also a new field. I used to be ornithologist when I was like when I started my career, and now I'm working like with different contractors. It's I'm not used to it, but it's very interesting at the same time. And we are creating really something new, which never was there in Carpathians. So I'm very excited. So there would be much more outdoor programs, camps for kids in Carpathians. And I'm very happy about that.
Are those programs only for kids, or who can participate in general?
Our first aim are local kids, local communities who are within area of within protected areas we are working with. And the first target audience is they are local kids. We hope that in future, when educators of these protected areas will get used to perform these programs, they will propose it maybe for tourists, for visitors, for adults. But now they are only starting, and it's easier. Always, it's easier to work with kids who are always happy to, you know, hang out somewhere in nature and to do some activities. So now we are starting only.
That sounds very good. Why do you think this education work is so important right now, especially right now?
Mm-hmm. So education in general education work is important because it's strategically, it's forming like our
society,
society,
or what are you
looking for? No, I mean, the education is important everywhere because it creates type of personality you will be. I became interested in nature because someone brought me in nature and showed me birds when I was starting university, and I never saw birds in hand so close, and it's affected me so much that I became ornithologist. So someone should bring kids in nature and make this experience cool and emotional, so they will at least like nature. Maybe not become scientists. No, it's not. Maybe they will become businessmen, local politician, or teacher in school, but they will love nature, and that is important. There, this emotional connection. So it's important in all times. Now, in the conditions of war in Ukraine, it's even more important. Why? Because when you spend time in nature and you are in this mode of researcher, you are not staring in your phone or just eating some sandwiches and thinking about your life and all these stressful things. But when you are doing something which is connected to nature, you are watching birds, you are looking for insects. So your brain is focused on something awesome, on something beautiful. You are finding out something new for you. It's good for your brain always, but you are focused on something which is not stressed, which is not stressful for you. And, you know, like in for adults, it's also very important, but also for kids. Sometimes people think that the kids, they don't understand anything, but no, they understand from very early age what is happening, and they can be very anxious about it when they even don't know what they're anxious about, but they feel. They maybe don't know things, but they feel things. So this time in nature, this focusing on beauty of nature, on something amazing, something new in nature, this time is important for kids also, not only for adults. So this environmental education have another role, just to distract us from stress and to help us our psychic to survive. Like for me, it's working as well as person, and I know many people who are trying to help themselves by walking in nature and watching birds or just observing nature. Because you can walk in nature and think about news, yeah, and you will be stressed. But when you search for something in nature, you are busy. Your brain is busy. So it's really important for kids, for adults. Also, there are children from families. For example, there are many families, and in Carpathian too, where parents, they are militaries, for example, they are on war, or maybe they died during a war. And it's much harder than I can imagine. But how can we help these kids? At least we can help them to smile, to have some cool experience, to have a nice time with their mates, their outdoor, and to make them at least happy for those couple of days. And this experience for them, it's very important, and it can be crucial for them. Maybe for us, it just our kids are having fun, but maybe for some of kids, it's saving saving them, you know. I think that now environmental education is becoming even more important in Ukraine in these conditions of war.
And where are the challenges you are facing also because of the war? Did the work itself change?
Yeah, you know, so in western part of Ukraine, we don't have as many attacks, shellings, for example, missiles, as on eastern part or even in Kyiv. But still, There are risks. We have air alarms, and you never know if this air alarm is really dangerous or it will be just air alarm and that's it. So potentially it's danger every time it's air alarm. So you should be in a shelter somewhere, better to be in a safe place. When you work with school kids in a within school program, it's also an official, like you should be in place where you can find shelter quickly. So sometimes some schools, some parents, they are afraid to let their kids go go away from school, for example. So in Western Ukraine, it's not a big problem, but you never know, so it's risk. So it's challenging. It's mostly such. It's mostly connected with bigger cities. In Carpathian, it's small villages where our protected areas are working. Usually, it's not an issue. And in those regions, the air alarm is not so often as in Kyiv region, for example, or in the eastern part of Ukraine. But still, there are some situations. That's the main, I think. If I remember something else, I will tell you later.
Okay. You now talked about how the war is affecting your work, and you already mentioned protected areas in the east of Ukraine being destroyed maybe for forever, basically. How do you stay motivated? Is it difficult to stay motivated with your work if you're thinking about areas getting destroyed completely, protected areas?
Like emotionally, it's hard. I just try to focus on those things which I can change. When you are thinking about those damage which is there, like you cannot change it, and it's so dramatic and it's really tragedy for nature, for people, for our country. And we should remember it. We should we should remember it. Maybe if there are opportunities to help, we should help there. But here I can do something. And even people who moved from eastern parts to western part of Ukraine, many of them are living in Carpathian as well. And in our national parks and reserves, some events are being organized for internally displaced people too. Especially in the beginning of war, when there were a lot of people living in even in buildings of national parks. Now it's not so intense and as in 2022, but still there, like in Carpathian, there's still a lot of people living from eastern part of Ukraine. For them, it's also like very good to have this, let's call it, safe place. Carpathians are much safer than other parts of Ukraine. So to feel safe and to sleep without air alarms, to sleep without shellings out of your house. So, and this beautiful nature, which is so different from nature in eastern part of Ukraine, their nature is also very beautiful. But to see mountains, forests, it's a very emotional experience, really, even if you don't know about nature a lot, but still it's very emotional. And when you have this additional information, exciting information from educators, it's even more. So for those people who came in Carpathians during last 3 years, it's like for those who are participating in protected areas events, it's good, I think. Yeah, and I'm glad that parks are trying to help those internally displaced people.
And what role does FZS play in that? And also for you personally, like, which role has FZS in the whole war context for you?
So when a full-scale war started, Evzodes immediately started to provide with emergency support to even to those protected areas we are not working with in the southern and the south or eastern part of Ukraine, and it was like very critically important just to survive those people who to workers of those areas. Also, Evzodes support provided a lot of emergency support to Carpathian protected areas for those like many internally displaced people were living there, and they needed place to live, like mattresses, I know, food, other things. So it was like Evzodes really did a cool job because. Like we managed to do it very quickly, immediately. This immediate response was very important because people started coming like during first days of full scale war, and you immediately need to help them somehow. So that's helped immediately, and it was very important. And And also, what is after this first stage, intense stage. What is important that Evzodes is supporting protected areas, and in this reality which we are now, protected areas have never had big finances from governmental budget, and now it's even less, much less. So they lack money even for patrol to go for patrolling their area. They even don't have budget to put petrol in their cars. And when you are talking about environmental education, it's not even on the first place. So what Evzodes is doing is supporting the current work of protected areas. So supporting with like operational costs just to give possibility to national parks and nature reserves to do their everyday work, which they should do, but they just don't have finances because we have war in our country. And it's really great. It's a big amount of resources and coordination is being done. But it's like it's making happening that protected areas are still functioning, and that's very good.
And I know that there's also a lot of third party funding for that, like donors who give money to FZS and then be forwarded to you guys. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your time in this very interesting interview, Hannah. And keep up the great work with your team. That is really amazing in these difficult, difficult times. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode I'll keep in mind for some time. I am more than thankful for these honest and personal interviews Maria, Hannah and Maike gave me, and for the great work that the FZS team is keeping up in the difficulties of a war. If you want to contribute to this work, FZS would be very happy to receive donations. With that, you can support the work of Hannah and Maria in Ukraine directly. You can find all the necessary information in the show notes and on the FZS homepage. My name is Marco Dinter, and you'll hear me again on the next episode of Hinter dem Zoo geht's weiter.